An evening of lively, smart conversation and jazz. Join me, John Williams, for a live taping of the Mincing Rascals podcast, Robert's Pizza, and Jazz, Wednesday, June 12th, 6 to 8 at Winter's Jazz Club in Streeterville. Tickets at WGNRadio.com/rascals.
Supreme Court Justice Joy Cunningham, Illinois Supreme Court Justice Joy Cunningham is in our studio. She is running again for that seat. Not necessarily running again for that seat, but she's running for that seat. Because how is it that you are on the Supreme Court now?
Good morning, and thank you so much for having me. I was appointed to the seat by the Illinois Supreme Court when Justice Ann Burke retired in 2022.
I see. So you have been then on there for about a year and a half now.
That's right.
Prior to that, you were on the appellate court for 16 years. You were 4 years circuit court justice. So you've been sitting on a bench for almost 22 years.
That's correct.
We talked to your opponent last week. He said that he's been at it for about 27 years, and Justice Reyes seems to have a good background, too. He made me laugh. He said that sometimes he drives around with the robe in his trunk of his car, and if somebody needs him, he can rush to the scene of some small town or area and preside over certain cases. Yeah, all of that just to say that I think we've got a fair and square race here. I wonder how we would distinguish you from your opponent.
Well, I've had a very diverse and broad practice background, and I tell you, being on the Supreme Court for the past year and a half, it's very, very apparent to me that having a very diverse practice background is really important given the variety of cases we hear and the importance of the issues that come before us. So my diverse practice background in both the private and the public sector, I think, sets me apart.
What do you mean by diverse? How are you diverse?
Well, I've had corporate experience. I've had significant trial experience. I have been an assistant attorney general. I have had experience setting up, for example, from scratch and two insurance companies. So it's kind of a joke. And when I was on the appellate court, I was the resident insurance expert because I had done a great deal of insurance law, and there's a lot of litigation around insurance. I have done lots of corporate law. I've done antitrust matters. I've done estate and trust matters, just a very broad variety. And that's what I think sets me apart, because the Supreme Court is the ultimate arbiter of any legal issue that's heard in state court in Illinois, and so the justices really have to be prepared.
Prior to all of that, you were a nurse?
Well, yes. I've had a very non-linear career. My path to the Illinois Supreme Court has not been a straight line. I was a registered nurse. My undergraduate degree actually is in nursing. And I worked as a nurse during law school. I worked nights and went to law school during the day. And it was a great way to pay for my law school education, actually.
So when you were going to nursing school, though, you knew you wanted to be an attorney?
No, I didn't. I practiced as a nurse for a few years before I went to nursing school. It was more of an evolution after I became a nurse. I liked being a nurse to some extent, but that wasn't my calling. And as time went by, it became apparent to me, and I wanted to go to law school, and I thought my nursing education and my nursing degree was a very good platform for that.
So you're still paying on your student loans?
No. So I am not paying on my student loan for that very reason. When I worked as a nurse, I was an intensive care nurse. So I got a premium for working nights. I got a premium for working 12-hour shifts. And I got a premium for my ICU experience. So I was able to work two 12-hour shifts every weekend. I did that for 3.5 years, and I was able to make a good salary so that I paid down my law school debt as I went along. And I had a debt when I graduated, but it was not the crushing debt that most law students have.
You know, I think about the U.S. Supreme Court lately and some of the issues that are before them. I think how almost intimidating it would be, at least to a layperson like myself, to not only judge correctly, say, on something, but to know the law, to know the history, to know the cases that, you know, serve as precedent to it, or should this be a precedent setter? it just strikes me as a really difficult intellectual or academic task. Are you ever intimidated by some of these cases before you?
Well, I wouldn't say intimidated, but there are some cases that evoke a much deeper thought and analysis than others. And I think every judge who is really careful about their decisions would probably tell you the same thing. So there are cases that you really, how would I say, do a very, very deep dive or a deeper dive than you would. There are some cases that the answer is very obvious, and I think most judges would tell you that as well. But then there are others when it's not. And as a Supreme Court justice, we are the last resort. So making sure that we get it right is really important, and it's worth the time, the extra time that you have to spend on those types of cases.
I appreciate that, but I will also tell you it's been frustrating to my colleagues and I as we watch, say, the Bring Chicago Home ballot initiative come up and go under several rounds of judicial review, or Donald Trump on the ballot in Colorado and Illinois, for that matter. And you think, what are you justices doing? Hurry up. Make up your mind. We either have elections coming up, or as these things drag on, the upcoming presidential election becomes more of a factor. It brought us to this. After you hear both arguments, does a justice kind of sit around scratching your chin going, I'll think about it? Or is it reading about background? I mean, what's the decision process? How much time after the last arguments are made lapses before, in fact, you make up your mind?
Well, that's a very interesting question, because there's no specific time, and each case is taken on its own merits and the facts of that particular case. So some cases can be decided rather quickly, and there are other cases that cannot, because either there is no precedent, so we have to really analyze the issues, look to other jurisdictions that may have handled that issue before, and that kind of analysis really takes time.
Do you consult with other judges, other justices on the bench?
Oh, in the Supreme Court, everything is discussed among all seven of us, always.
Really?
Every single case.
Do you think that's good? It sounds like
I think that's good, because you need to have the input of other people who may have, other justices who may have expertise in a particular issue that you don't. For example, I know a lot about insurance law, and I know a lot about antitrust and corporate matters. So in those discussions, I would be very comfortable taking the lead. There are other cases, other situations where my colleagues who have done a lot of criminal law, they are comfortable taking the lead because that's their background. So we discuss every single case among all seven of us.
Still, one wonders if the powers of persuasion of one justice might weigh on those who are more easily convinced. I don't want to say intimidated, because I can't imagine that's a trait that you find on the Supreme Court, but I would like to think that everybody would be of their own mind.
And you would be correct. I feel very honored to be with this particular group of Supreme Court justices. They're all smart. Everybody is cordial, and I have not ever worked with a harder working group of people in my life. They're very committed to doing the right thing. Now, we don't always agree. In fact, we often disagree. However, it takes four votes to get anything passed on the Illinois Supreme Court. And in the majority of cases, the law is pretty clear. And in those cases where it's not so clear, I think getting four votes is something that we eventually come to after lots and lots of discussion.
You didn't get a chance to rule on should Donald Trump be on the ballot in Illinois, did you?
No, we did not.
Do you have an opinion about that?
Even if I did, I wouldn't tell you.
Why not?
I couldn't, because it may yet come before us. I don't know.
I asked your opponent about some issues along these lines, like how does he feel about gun legislation or right-to-life issues in Illinois. Can you share with us your philosophy about some of those topics?
Well, that I can, but like the assault weapons ban is public record, and I'm very proud to have been a part of the court that voted in favor of upholding the constitutionality of that law. And that was a very close decision as well. It was a 4-3 decision. I was one of the four.
That one may yet go before the U.S. Supreme Court.
It has gone before. They have filed a petition for certiorari, and the U.S. Supreme Court has denied the petition. So the Illinois Supreme Court's our ruling stands, at least for now, until if another case comes along that has an issue that's not exactly like the one in the Illinois case, they can attempt again to get it to the United States Supreme
Court.
What
did you determine about guns and munitions in Illinois?
Well, we determined that the Constitution allows the legislature to put some limitations on certain things. For example, nowhere in the Second Amendment does it say you can keep a rocket launcher, for example, in your home. You can bear the right to bear arms is not what's being challenged. It was the type of arms in this case. You know, a machine gun or an assault weapon that fires 2,000 rounds a minute, that kind of thing is not necessarily protected by the Constitution.
What do you think about common use, though? That is, the assault-style rifles are very common in the United States now. And didn't the U.S. Supreme Court allow for what are considered common weapons?
Well, I think the use of the word common, that would certainly become, I think, an issue of contention when that comes up before a court again, because just because something is commonly used does not necessarily mean that it's constitutionally protected.
By the way, Joy Cunningham is in our studio. She's on the Supreme Court. She's running for election to that seat. The last day to vote is tomorrow. Some of you may have already voted. This affects people statewide. You said to me when we came into the studio, I said, I don't think that the names of justices, sometimes you look at the ballot and you don't recognize those names. Even at the Supreme Court level, I'll bet most Illinoisans can't name all seven justices on the state Supreme Court. And you said that's a shame because your life is probably more likely to be impacted by a judge than maybe by your state senator. Do I quote you correctly?
You quote me exactly correctly. And I've long since felt a certain amount of chagrin about that because the average person knows very little about their judicial candidates. They know nothing about who sits on the circuit court, who sits on the appellate court, and nothing about who sits on the appellate court. I mean, the Supreme Court. And these are people who are making decisions about the lives of all Illinoisans every single day. And as I said, you're more likely to come in contact with a judge during the course of your life or something that's ruled upon by a judge than you are by your state legislature.
I'm thinking about it myself. I haven't committed that many crimes, but I have found myself in a courtroom a couple of times, and I don't think I ever sat down with my state representative or senator. And I think we're all feeling the impact of issues about guns or right to life or IVF or all of these sorts of issues which courts are ruling on. So then why did you leave the circuit court? There you were as a judge. You left that to work for Northwestern Medical, right?
Yes, I was actually recruited away from the bench, which is an unusual thing. But as I said before, my path to the Supreme Court has been very nonlinear. So I was recruited to Northwestern Memorial Healthcare System to be their senior vice president, corporate secretary, and general counsel because I'd had a significant amount of healthcare and corporate experience before becoming a judge.
So you left the bench to go to private practice, if you will.
I did.
How long were you working for Northwestern?
7 years, and it was a very interesting and exhilarating 7 years.
Was it hard to leave the private sector? I'll bet you had to take a pay cut.
I took a significant pay cut.
How much?
Well, I will tell you, it was almost 80%.
To leave Northwestern and then go back to the court?
That's correct.
Why did you do that?
I did that for personal reasons. I had a young son, and I came to motherhood later than most people. And many times people say, oh, I want to spend more time with my family. And you say, oh, really? For me, it really was true. I wanted to be able to use my law degree, make a decent living, but have time to be with my son. And it worked out that way.
You can't double dip, can you? Can you be a judge and still?
No, you cannot. The Constitution is clear on that. If you are a judge, that is all you are doing.
Why should it be that way for members of the city council or the state legislature? Because they're often ruling or making ordinances or laws that impact their profitability. Should there be a law or an ordinance about that?
Well, that I can't comment on because I wouldn't be surprised if something or an offshoot of that issue or that concept ended up in the courts someday. So I can't comment on that, except to say that our law, as it currently stands, allows them
to do that. So now there's Ed Burke, who has in fact been convicted. And in fact, he still gets to keep his law license. And when that came before the Supreme Court, it was not definitive. What happened when Ed Burke's law license came before the Supreme Court?
Well, you know, that's the commenting on the inner workings of the court's always something that we're not supposed to do. But I will tell you this. When a law license, the issue of someone's law license comes up, it doesn't come directly to the Supreme Court. It first goes to the Attorney Registration and Disciplinary Commission. They then make a recommendation. It goes to a next level, to another level of review. Eventually, it ends up in the Supreme Court. Now, if the Supreme Court does not have a quorum, then it cannot vote on the particular issue, and that's what happened in
this
court.
What's a quorum?
Quorum is you have to have a majority of justices there and ready to vote.
So four?
At least four. And if you don't have a quorum, then whatever happened at the lower level of appeal stays in place. That's what the Constitution says, and that's what happened in this case. So it wasn't that the Supreme Court actively adjudicated that Mr. Burke keep his law license. There was no quorum there was not a sufficient quorum to vote on the appeal that came up from the lower court.
Your opponent says that was a failure of this court. Y'all couldn't round up five justices?
Well, my opponent does not have a good understanding or any understanding, as far as I know, of how the Supreme Court actually functions. And, you know, so I will just say, leave it there. He does not understand how the Supreme Court functions. And it certainly is a nice political commentary to say it's a failure of the court. But I would submit to you that the Supreme Court follows the rules. The Constitution says that you must have a quorum. And not for any particular case, you must have a quorum for all cases, whether it involves Mr. Burke or somebody or anybody else.
Two other quick points. But I mean, you all didn't. Did you? Was it your sense, though, that the court decidedly avoided the Burke issue?
Absolutely.
That way?
100% no.
One last thing. How tough would you say you are on crime? I hate that sound of that question, but I just think that's such a concern to Chicagoans right now. Can you give me your umbrella speech about crime in the city?
I think I am really, really a stickler for following the law. And that's what I would say that that's what my colleagues do as well. But speaking for myself, I follow the law to the letter. And sometimes what is legal isn't just, and sometimes what is just isn't legal. But I follow the law and I go where it leads.
Joy Cunningham is a Supreme Court justice, and she wants your vote today or tomorrow for that seat that she currently holds. Justice Cunningham, thanks for coming into our studio.
Thank you so much for having me. Thanks to your listeners as well.